Okay, maybe we can start. Welcome to this course in scientific methodology, a common course for several master programs. Many of you will have, I know that many of you, or at least some of you, have had courses that is highly overlapping with this course before. Nevertheless, it's here because we need to make sure that all of you gets a proper, or at least gets up to a certain level when it comes to talking science and using scientific terminology and handle information in a what we could call a scientific way. It's a pretty short course. Before I do this, maybe I should present myself. Isn't that a good idea? Forgot that. I'm Frode Volden. I am basically educated in something that none of you probably are. I'm a psychologist. So I'm not from any of your fields, probably. Meaning that the examples that I give may be at other areas as well. But at least I'm pretty certain that the basic terminology that I use is the common language of science. The course will be supported, as I said. It's a relatively short course, as I said. It's 5 course credits you will get out of this. Meaning that it won't be a very deep course in the philosophy of science or stuff like that. It's going to be rather practical in its approach to this area. I will try to argue for why using scientific language, and we will deal a little bit with how to do things in practice. And most of the examples will be from handling information from experiments where we include human beings as the source of information. Nevertheless, I think the language that we speak is rather general for all scientific purposes. It will be supported by a front page, so make sure you get access to that one. Most of you probably have already. Let's see if I can get that. It's over there, isn't it? Yeah. And well, the course and the themes that comes up here is not written in stone yet. It may be a bit fluent, but this should give you a pretty okay overview of what's coming up and what's going to happen in the course. So there will be a section for each week of the course, or at least for each week where there are some teaching activities going on. I will also post handouts or the slides that I use there. I will put some other material there as well, which I may refer to now and then. So it should be a pretty okay way to follow the course, even if you're not able to be here. I will also link streamings and recordings of these lectures there. So all this should be available to you. There will be a number of lectures, as you probably have noticed from your calendar. There will also be some project work and some meetings in some kind of a project group. You will be organized into groups of, let's say, 4 to 6, 7 people who will perform a small science experiment in the end. You will gather some data, and those data is something we will use in a data analysis task that we are doing. So we're going to use a tool to do a little bit of statistics as well, though this is not a statistics course or anything. But it might give you some impression of what we mean by hypothesis testing and significance levels and stuff like that. In addition to the lectures, you will now and then find small, we may call them learning objects or whatever, which may be a little bit of support. These are small recordings, 5-10 minutes pieces, where I try to explain some of the terminologies and some of the topics that we are going through in the different lectures. So only short nuggets of lectures. We will also you will also be required to hand in a couple of short essays. One will be coming up right after next week's lecture, where you will write a short lecture after reading a couple of small scientific papers and identify some central elements of those articles. Independent variable, dependent variable, validity, reliability of the research, etc. But we'll get back to that. But it's only going to be a short thing, and it's a go no go thing, and it's a requirement then to be able to take the exam in the end to get this one approved. There will also be a lecture on plagiarism on from the library. They will do some kind of a thing on this. How to treat information, how to treat references, how to treat other scientists' work. So there will also be a short hand-in that needs to be approved there. So two of these needs to be done. And then you're also going to do, I just mentioned this research project. It may be a very relevant project for you. It may be within your areas of expertise in some way. So this may be something that has to do with interaction design or information security or whatever. But the main idea here is that you should gather data, so you could just as well do something that's fun to do in a project like this. So a lot of the projects that we have had here are projects like, does a slice of bread always land with the wet side down, or something like that? And does a cat always land on his feet? I don't know if that's ethical, but anyway. There's going to be a lecture on ethics as well, so we may get back to it there. As you have noticed, all these lectures are being held in English, as there are students here that require that. Actually, quite a few. I'm not a native language English speaker, so for me this is a foreign language as well, meaning that excuse my limitations there. But it will probably work out quite okay. Because I know that most of you who require English aren't native English speakers either, so we will handle this. When you write these project papers, you may write them in English, and that might be a good exercise for you, because things will need to be delivered in English at some point, at some courses later, or at some point anyway. But in this course, you can write in Norwegian if you want to, or any other language that I can read in a decent way. So it should probably be okay with other Scandinavian languages, but it stops there. So, okay. There will be a written exam for the course. There is no an official date for this. I know that there has been another date for this exam around. Actually, I noticed it today. Someone told me that on the time edit, there is a date 9th of October. I don't know why that's there, because the official date is then the 13th of October. But anyway, 13th or 9th, it means it's not a very long way into the future. So it's a short course. For this exam, the exam will be, you will probably get something. I vary this a little bit, but it's will be getting 5 questions, something like that, and be required to answer 4 of them or something similar. Depends on the size of the questions. But it's purely a theoretical and written exam, which you will need to do here on campus, of course. Or there are actually some other possibilities if there are some distance students here. That's here just for today and these days. There are some possibilities of taking the practical exam at other institutions as well, but that will have to be organized individually. I didn't say that. I will put a lot of maybe some 30 exam questions or possible exam questions on the front page within a couple of weeks or something. So then you will be able to practice the type of questions that you will get. But I can't guarantee that there won't be questions that goes outside the questions that are examples that I put on the front of the page. You may get other questions as well. Okay? Why do we learn about science? Why do we have this course? Well, of course, it is because on the level of education that you are on now, on a master level, you're actually expected to apply scientific knowledge to a higher degree than ever before within your study life. And this goes especially then for the master thesis that you're going to write at the end of the 2 years master program. A master thesis is supposed to have a certain level of science in it. It's supposed to apply scientific methodologies, and it's supposed to apply an academic style of writing that requires you to read a lot of science and to apply that in a structured way. And of course, also this is a help for you too, because some of the examples will be examples that has to do with misuse of science and misuse of conclusions from science. So one thing that we want to do here is to make you into a more, let's say, critical consumer of scientific information. So we will try to learn you some criteria for choosing what's good and what's not so good in the scientific area. Of course, as I mentioned in the last line here, some of you may be quite skilled in this, but I'm pretty sure that some of these concepts are quite new for you, for some of you. I've already said this. The master thesis is supposed to be a demonstration that you are able to perform individual research, but of course under guidance from a supervisor. But anyway, it is expected from this master thesis that it should at some level be an original contribution to the area that you are doing your research within. So it's not only going to be a task where you demonstrate that you have gained good knowledge on an area. You should also do a contribution based on what others have done before you. And of course, when we say science, no, we're not necessarily, or that's a bit too strong. We're not expecting you to contribute world-class science. We're not expecting you to change the world in any at any area, actually. But we expect of you that you investigate the topics that you are writing about based on scientific principles, and that you develop the necessary competence to do that. That's what we that's what we request from you here. And of course, that within this area where you do research, that you also reflect about ethical, legal, and of course practical aspects of the scientific contribution that you are taking part in. Some of you will do experiments. Some of you will do experiments where you just compare two technologies. Some will do experiments where you maybe observe people using two different technologies. Some of you will do purely, let's say, theoretical mathematical things, but where you compare something to something that was existing. There will be a number of different types of experimentation that you will take part in. So the aim of this course is not to give you the necessary tool pack for all these areas, but it's thought as a, let's say, a common, what do you call that in English? Grunnmur in Norwegian. Foundation for, thank you. Foundation for the work you're doing. Good. So, what is research? Well, basically, it's just to to wonder about something. It may be something very specific or something more theoretical. And it means that you describe how to find answers to that questions, that you actually do it in the continuation of that, and that you analyze the data and conclude in the right way based on what you have done. And when you see a structure like this, when you see this nice structure over here, you will also see the structure of a scientific paper, because most academic writings have this basic structure. You may have written papers like this before, papers that has a background where you state some kind of a problem, where you read how they are going to solve that, or how to find an answer to that question. That's the methodology part. Then they describe data in some way before they then do some type of data analysis and present the results to you and conclude. So this is also what science is. Science is both a way to present data, and it's a way to work, and it's a way to approach things that we wonder about. There are, of course, limitations here, because, well, is any type of curiosity towards some topic research? No, it isn't. Pure literature research, where you just reproduce what others have done before, is usually not considered as good research. There are exceptions from this. And that is the type of meta-analysis that's taking place, where you try to summarize all or a number of different studies and draw some new conclusions based on that. And that may be good science. But just self-enlightenment and reading yourself up to a certain level on a topic is not research, and that's not what we want to see. Neither is research just to take knowledge from one area and apply it in a new area. Let's say intrusion detection that works well in the oil industry probably works well in, I don't know, another type of industry or whatever. So just moving the information over to a new field is hardly science. That's what consultants do. That's what you do when you get the job later, maybe. And of course, neither is science a catchword. This is done scientifically. New science shows that. New research shows you that. A spoon of yogurt is improving your life quality or something like that. That's a catchword. This shampoo, remember, with all its probiotics something, makes your hair a lot shinier, says this science, this researcher in his white lab coat. Seen all these commercials. That's not science. Jump that. So let's then move over to a new area here. Why do we do this? Why can't we just observe something and conclude in a straightforward way? Why can't we just trust our eyes and trust our experience of the world? Well, it's obvious my program is much better than the others. It is for me. Well, you can say that what the scientific method gives you a tool to be a lot more precise on these areas, where you actually can qualify and say that one belief actually is superior to another one, that one program is superior to another one, that the user experience that you have when you use one type of password words to get into the system actually is much better than when you use another strategy for that. Not only your impression, but you will get a fund, you'll get numbers maybe to show that this is actually true. And another reason for this is that when you do things in a when you use the language of science, you also apply methodologies and strategies that allows others to evaluate whether you have done the right thing, whether you have done the right conclusions. Because good science always reports in detail all the numbers it has put into the equations. It tells you how it has tried to measure something, and if you disagree with the way the method they have used, maybe you will get all the results. But at least the researchers have communicated in detail so that you can try to either replicate or judge whether their conclusions was good enough or valid. I've included a link here to, there are some links here which you can, maybe I'll try to put them in some kind of a link library on Fronter as well. This is a link to a famous, or the description of what a famous philosopher, Karl Popper. It's a discussion of Karl Popper's arguments for doing things in a scientific way. I'll try to make some of these links. I won't do them here in public now. It's usually some. The net is full of these kind of things, so if you're interested in some of the topics, it's quite easy to find stuff nowadays. You're probably better at that than I am. I'm a psychologist, and we can just take a small, let's say, sidestep here, and also maybe do a few exercises. Because what we have become more and more aware of is that the human observer, the human brain, is very unlike a computer in its way of handling information. We are extremely poor users of statistics, and our minds seems to be triggered into making fast decisions based on somewhat dodgy background. When I'm talking about this, I'm absolutely suggest that you take a look at the writings of Daniel Kahneman. Kahneman and Tversky, they have made this book, Thinking Fast and Slow. It came out some 3-4 years ago. Kahneman is a Nobel Prize winner in economy, I think. And he has shown a lot of these defects or effects of how the human brain actually works. You can say, well, what he has seen is that, yes, we may be researchers in our brains. We may take the facts, analyze them before we get to a conclusion. We may be this type of intuitive researchers. but only occasionally. Because in most cases, we tend to stick to a way of drawing conclusions that's a lot faster and more intuitive. And he refers to this as system one and system two thinking, where system one is the you could say the automatic emotionally driven system, where we tend to very rapidly draw conclusions based on maybe previous experiences or how things are have been done before. And system two then is the more rational system, which we like to think that we apply in most situations, but that we don't. So let me just show you this one. This is an old American riddle. Most of you will. You know that this is a trick, right? So actually, when you use the rational part of your brain, you think that the answer that I'm quite certain popped up in your heads when you saw this, you can't avoid it, was the bat costs $1. How many of you thought that as the first idea? Yeah. You don't have to tell me, because I'm quite sure that at least 90% of you did. And that is, of course, that's the automatic impulse here to give this answer, because it seems so obvious. But of course, you take yourself into okay, it's tricking us now, so it's probably not true. And the correct answer is anyone? Yeah, the ball cost? Okay, I was talking about the cost of the bat here. Okay, how much does the ball cost? Yeah, 5 cents. But the answer wasn't $1 then. The answer was that popped up in your head was 10 cents, when you have this way of saying it. And of course, this has to do with how we usually handle numbers. The easiest way to do this is to just subtract the one information you have from the total here, and that is to say that it costs 10 cents. And this is a very good example of the how system one is the usual system that we apply when we draw conclusions. And I'm quite sure this is a system that we also apply when we try to observe and find the answer of any phenomena around us. There are other examples as well from, our use of statistics. We are afraid of terrorists, although the chance of being a victim of terrorism, I guess anywhere in the world, there may be a few exceptions, are extremely low compared to the dangers of life itself. Even if a few hundred people are killed out of some millions, it's usually more dangerous to cross the road. But we're not very good at using statistics like this. We tend to use emotions. We're afraid of this. We're more afraid of this than we are of being or falling off our bikes or whatever, or crash our cars. That's something we believe we have control over, but we're really poor users of statistics when we draw conclusions. There are other systematic errors that we do when we try to draw conclusions as well. And this is one such example. Spend a little time on this one. It's called the Wason's card selection task. It was made in the early 70s, and it's been used in a huge number of research articles where they're trying to analyze how we draw conclusions out of, even in a very regulated way. This is a very limited task, right? It should be quite easy. And the task is, well, you have four cards here, and each card has a front end and a back end. On one side of the cards there is a letter, on the other side there is a number. So you're shown these four cards, and your task then is to determine whether a rule that I present to you is true or false. And the rule that I give you is that if a card has a vowel on one side, it has an even number on the other side. Hvis et kort har en vokal på den ene siden, så har den et partall på den andre siden. Which cards do you need to turn over? Which card or cards do you need to turn over to determine whether this rule is true or false? Spend a few minutes on this one. And try to write down in front of you which you need to turn over. Yeah, we will give it a few minutes. People can think about this one. Shouldn't be very difficult, should it? It's only four cards. So how many? There is one obvious card that you need to turn over, right? And that is the A. So everyone agrees that you need to turn over the A. But do you need to do more? The four, you say? All of them? Only the four? Four and A? That's actually wrong. And that's the second most common answer here, or it's the most common answer, the one you gave there. You need to turn over A and 4. Only about 25% of the population in any at any level, at any university, who hasn't seen this task before, tends not to choose the right solution to this one, because A and 4 is wrong. I'll give you the explanation. What is the right one? Huh? A and 7. Or A and 5 in this case. Yeah, you were looking at the... there was something, someone that told me that the numbers, you could get the wrong association here because it came out as AK-47. And that's obviously a weapon or something. so I changed it, but it should be the same. A and 5 is the right answer here. And why is that? Does the rule that I gave you, does it say anything at all what can be on the other side of a consonant? Do I say that? No? It doesn't. And it tells you different things, of course, but one thing it tend to say is that we have a very strong tendency to try to confirm something. This is usually called the confirmation bias. When we're looking for information and when we're looking for ways to or looking for answers based on data in the world around us, we tend to try to confirm a hypothesis rather than to throw it away. or falsify it. So we tend to look at the two things that is mentioned in the rule here, and that is of course both the even number and the vowel. So that's what we refer to, and we try to confirm this, and we tend to overlook that what we actually should have done here was to try to falsify things, because if we found a vowel on the other side of the 5 here, it would show us that the rule here was false. Okay, I think we'll take a break here, starting 4:15.